In the 1950s, a U.S. Navy engineer named Frank Watlington was trying to record Russian submarines. It was the height of the Cold War, and the U.S. government had built a top-secret listening station where Frank worked with a hydrophone, an underwater microphone, off the coast of Bermuda. But Frank's gear kept picking up something else. These eerie, beautiful sounds. They weren't submarines. They were humpback whales. The story goes that Frank tried to hide the recordings at first, afraid commercial whalers would use them to track and hunt the humpbacks, who were already on the verge of extinction. But word about the recordings got out, not to whalers, but to acoustic biologists Katie and Roger Payne. In 1967, they traveled to meet Frank and hear his recordings. And that's when a discovery was made. Hold up, off the coast of Bermuda, listening to these whale recordings, the biologists realized they were hearing patterns, rhythmic, repeated vocalizations. The whales were singing. This is Katie Payne, one of the biologists.
All the whales, all the males in a breeding population are singing pretty much the same song at the same time. And all of those themes had the same basic structure, and all the whales were agreeing on it.
This was the moment that modern science identified whale song.
Which is a pretty amazing thing.
Wanting to share these sounds with the world and hoping they might help whales rather than hurt them, Roger Payne, Katie's husband, convinced Frank to team up with the couple and produce an album of recorded whale song. Released in 1970, Songs of the Humpback Whale is a 5-track voyage through whale vocalization. It quickly sold 25,000 copies, then 100,000 copies, then went multi-platinum. It now stands as the top-selling environmental album in history. And it did what the scientists hoped. Songs of the Humpback Whale is credited with raising awareness of the intelligence and culture of whales, helping ignite the Save the Whales movement, which, in turn, led the United Nations to institute a 10-year global moratorium on commercial whaling. It's been 50 years since the release of that album. But Katie Payne, she's still just as awestruck by the mysteries of whale song as she was that day in 1967 when she first heard it. I'm AC Rowe, and this is The Doc Project.
Since I was a kid, I've had dreams about whales. And I still have dreams about orcas and other whales and dolphins.
This is Lindsay Dobbin. They were the curator of the 2020 Nocturne Art at Night Festival in Halifax. 50 years after the release of Songs of the Humpback Whale, Lindsay had an idea. They invited Katie Payne and her collaborator, musician Daniela Gesundheit, to help guide a workshop as part of the festival, teaching a group about whale song. Katie had done versions of this workshop before, but this time, things were a little different. This group was made up entirely of musicians who were brought in and taught about whale song, its history, its processes, but then invited to make their own compositions inspired by whales. We're going to follow one of the musicians from that workshop, Nicole, as she learns from Katie and the whales.
My name is Nicole Rampersad, and I'm a trumpet player. Yeah. I was a petrified kid, you know, did not participate in any extracurriculars, and the band teacher at the time sort of managed to get me into the band, I don't know how, and I picked the trumpet because, again, I go back to that petrified part of me, like, I don't want to screw this up, so I'm going to pick what I thought was the easiest instrument. And and how I judged what was the easiest instrument was literally on its looks. So, you know, if I compare it to the clarinet, oh, there's too many parts, too many buttons, I'm going to screw that up. I saw the music teacher put a mouthpiece into a horn, and there's three buttons. I'm like, that's the one. Little did I know what I was getting myself into, but that's how I got into the trumpet. And, you know, I played in public school bands, eventually thought, well, this is something I'm good at. I'm not good at much, but I'm okay at this. And did my undergrad at the University of Toronto, and then my master's in Boston at New England Conservatory. Practicing the trumpet is this never-ending game of not getting worse on the instrument. So, whereas with other instruments, it's like, okay, I'm practicing to get better. There's definitely an element of that. But most of your practice is like this fight to not get worse at the instrument, to not lose muscle memory, right? And so that's like, that's an interesting mindset to sort of be in always. So, I mean, I love the instrument. And at its core, it's a simple instrument, but it's just really hard to play. Improvisation is a main part of my practice. I've been an improvising musician for well over 15 years at this point. You have to be open-minded. You have to be present. It's the beauty of experimenting, right? You don't know. So Lindsay Dobbin sent me a message on Instagram, just seemingly out of the blue, and it was one line. It says, "Nicole, do you like whales?" And I responded within 2 minutes with a long paragraph, you know, saying, "Oh my God, Lindsay, I love whales. Every time I'm in their presence, I weep like a baby. I'm so overwhelmed." Geez, where to start? There's just something about them that just feels so generous. I don't know how else to put it. If I think specifically of the times where I've gone whale watching, and I've been twice now since moving to New Brunswick, you know, you're on this boat and you're just roaming around the Bay of Fundy, you know, hoping to see a whale, and it's just this anticipation, and, you know, it's not a guarantee, and when they finally do reveal themselves to you, it's just, there's just this joy, I guess. Just being, you know, a few feet away from a finback whale, I lost it. I mean, I just love being out in the ocean. It's the best place ever. So anyway, that was my response. A few weeks later, I get an email from Lindsay asking if I wanted to be involved in this project. And needless to say, it was a resounding yes. I'm always working to be a better listener. You know, that's a lifetime endeavor for me. Whether I become a whale at the end of it, I'm not sure. And if I do, I don't think that's a bad thing, you know?
I don't feel like much of a musician or much of a biologist, but at times I feel like a whale.
So Katie Payne was gracious enough to offer her time and her expertise with whale song in this workshop. And it was just really an enriching experience to hear her experience researching whale song. She spent decades researching, recording whale song. And in doing that research, she was able to discover that there's form in there and that it's not just communication, like it's song.
if it was 50 years ago and almost nothing was known about the lives of whales, where would you start? You'd probably start the way people start, with your eyes on the top of a tall ship. You climb up into the upper reaches and you look all around for some signal of the life of whales. But what are you looking for? They're underwater creatures. What you're looking for is just little spouts. They're breathing because they're mammals. They stay underwater for 10 to 20 minutes and then they come up and heave a great sigh, exhaling used air and taking in fresh air, and then down again. And if all eyes on the ship are looking in all directions, you may be very, very lucky and think that you've seen a whale. But in fact, you're using the wrong one of your senses. The best way to learn about them, as we, my husband Roger Payne and I, found, was to listen. Roger and I, interested in whales and antsy with life in the city, went to Bermuda and joined a Navy engineer named Frank Watlington in search for whales around the island on a Navy ship. And what he played for us is what we will now listen to. I urge you to just listen. You hear the whale's voice and you hear echoes from the bottom of the waves and the bottom of the sea.
I've listened to that recording a few times now, a couple times on loop, you know, and each time I just find myself going deeper with it. You know, the first time I listened to it start to finish, I approached it purely from a musical perspective. So, you know, I was writing down musical terms, you know, it's like, oh, track one, it kind of sounds like a synth, like an LFO synth. There's multiphonics. And, you know, high-pitched sounds and slow decays and, right? So, you know, really sort of technical. And then the more I got into it, you know, now when I listen to it, I just hear compassion and generosity and curiosity.
After we heard that, we were so moved that our lives were completely changed forever. It fell to me to listen to these tapes, and I made spectrograms and tracings of the spectrograms and realized that the whale was singing a different song as time went on.
The focus for me was, how can I immerse somebody in a process for a moment of time? I went through many processes, I guess, like mini processes. So where I've been a composer for, you know, a while now, I sort of had my usual sort of strategies like in mind that I would employ. Things like, you know, I'll put together a graphic score or maybe transcribe, you know, some of the whale songs. So I started to do those things and I just had this urge to sit with the whale song and just put the headphones on and listen.
In 1976, it went like this. In 1977. In 1978, you see it's longer still, and it ends. The whole ocean was full of these sounds, and they were different from the way they had been in 1976.
Any brass instrument, the sound, much like singing, the resonating starts with your body. In the case of a brass instrument, it's your lips. You know, whereas with, let's say, a woodwind instrument, the vibration is on the mouthpiece itself, right? It's the reed. And so because of that, like, it's probably the closest to singing in a way, because the vibration starts with your body. You know, it's not like with humans where we have vocal cords. It's almost like their body is the resonator in a way. In the same way that, you know, an instrument, right, is a resonator and an amplifier at once. And so I guess in the same way, like a whale's body is the same way. So the sound is, there's a part of their body that's vibrating, but then their body's also the resonator, right? In a way.
We listened for many years, and I made spectrograms in those years, and saw how the parts of the song were changing all the time. Each theme had its own history, and the history was somehow agreed on by all of the singers. And this, you could follow any singing whale, and you would find the song was evolving.
The thing that struck me and really stuck with me was the sound, so the timbre of their voice, so to speak. And within there, there's so much. There's the texture of it, the range, their vocal range, so to speak. You know, that really struck me. The rhythm, of course, yes, very, very complex. But then as you dig deeper and just peel back a few layers, it's highly complex rhythmically. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel the pulsing rhythm, the slow rhythm that runs through almost all whale songs, regardless of what the notes are. It's part of the ocean and it carries you there. Whether there's any intention behind that, I don't know. But we are susceptible to feeling those things.
It maybe doesn't translate into something that, you know, you can tap your foot to or dance to, but there is a timing and there's a pulse. And Anthony Braxton, for example, he talks about body time, right? And sort of, you know, what is your pulse, right? And how does everything relate to that? It's definitely how I approached it with this piece, was this idea of body time and pulse and movement. How do you accomplish that without a drummer providing that for you?
Every now and then you feel they're in synchrony, but then you find that they're diverging as if each one was on its own separate track.
For me, it was like, how do I create that feeling of hearing and receiving your sound in a space like the ocean, right? But in headphones. When I played the trumpet, I imagined being in a large reverberant space, whether that's the ocean or a big cave, right? But just a space where I could receive the sound that I was sending out.
They're improvising, they're listening, they're imitating. Every part of the song had its history, and all the whales were agreeing on what that history was. It was a jazz experience.
When I think of improvised jazz, I think of there was an interview that Coltrane did, and I'm going to paraphrase it as best as I can, where I think the person asked him, why are you so angry when you play? And you'd say, well, no, I'm not angry. Like this music is, you know, it's love, you know, I'm expressing love and joy, and this is joy, you know, it's joy to be able to make music and to put this out into the world. And so that's probably what I hear more than anything is joy in it, right? A joy and a generosity. Yeah. And I think that transcends genre ultimately. Yeah.
Each population makes two long migrations. In the North Atlantic, it's 1,300 miles between the cold polar waters where they feed and the warm tropical waters where they court and mate and give birth. And it's in those tropical waters chiefly that they do their singing. The song acts as a floating territory. It's kind of like bird song.
So you think deep down in the ocean, you can't really see down there. And so part of it is necessity. So they use sound to navigate, right? And so I started thinking about my ancestors and their travels, you know, over the ocean to Guyana from South India, how, you know, maybe lonely, confusing, disorienting that might be. I don't know a lot about my ancestors, shamefully enough, but I do know that they were brought over by the British, you know, from South India. And I just imagine, you know, that they were on this journey, so they know they were going to this other land, I just imagine, you know, spending all that time out at sea, no land in sight. So yeah, I almost imagine it like parallel worlds where whales are, you know, they're migrating. It was just a moment for me, like a nice moment to sort of imagine that.
You know, it's a mystery. That's the wonderful thing. There are parts of some of the songs that make you sad or that make you happy as a person, but we don't know about the emotions in the whales. We simply don't know.
The title of the piece, so kamus, which is it's a Finnish word, doesn't have a direct translation to English, but the closest it's is polar night, and it's the term that they give to the shortest day or the longest night of the year. And it's a time where people tend to get very insular, reflective. It can sometimes be a sad time of year. I chose that title because I'm always interested in words in other languages that don't have a direct translation. That was something that kind of stood out to me in this whole process of whale song. Like, we don't know why they sing, what the meaning is in the song.
It's a wonderful mystery.
I think after, you know, sitting with the workshop, it became sort of very personal, for lack of a better term. I've just understood that on a deeper level that there's so much I don't know. And that's wonderful because it means there's so much more to learn. And the way to learn those things is to listen. Just to stop, like it's okay. Like the act of listening is the act of doing something. Yeah, I think that's something I want to carry forward in, not just in any music endeavors, but in all areas of my life, I guess.
That doc was produced by Veronica Simmons. It was edited by me, AC Rowe. Special thanks to Johnny Spence for his help recording the workshop. The Whale Song Workshop was part of the 2020 Nocturne Art at Night Festival in Halifax. To hear Nicole's three-part whale-inspired composition, Kamos, in full, head over to our website. We're at cbc.ca/docproject. There you can find a link to the music created in the workshop by Nicole and the other musicians. That's all for us this week. The Doc Project is produced by Veronica Simmons, Allison Cook, Sherry Okeke, Tanera McLean, and me. Althea Manassin is our digital producer. Our senior producer is Jennifer Warren, and our executive producer is Joan Melanson. I'm AC Rowe. Thanks for listening.